Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
New studio, trying to get used to it.
I'm loving it.
Getting used to the layout. But we had a lot of stuff that happened this weekend. We had some more Diamond Leagues. We got more Diamond Leagues coming up. We have some Continental Tours. There's one going on live right now. So ideally, you should do a little dual screen action where...
Yes, get a monitor.
Podcast on one end and Rovereto?
I think so.
That's not how you say it.
I think so.
Rovereto?
You know.
I wouldn't know. I'm not good with the English language. I think it's Roberto or something like that. Anyway, regardless, watch that. Grant Fisher's running, I believe, a 3K in Roberto in
that
like
place.
In an hour in Italy. It's in Italy, right? I don't know.
I don't know.
Enough of this. but yeah, Coleman ran fast. Parchman ran fast. We'll get all into it. Addie Wiley did her thing. We'll talk about cross-country rankings at the end of the pod. Some controversy there. In the cross country, some people are not quite happy with my rankings.
Yes, so Gordon will explain himself.
I had to defend my honor, my ranking honor. But before that, we got to thank Pistachios. Look at that, we got them in studio now.
It's so awesome.
We got no salt pistachios. We got salted. Everything's different flavors. Check them all out, Olivia.
I know.
Do the ad read.
You know, I think we're all looking for a delicious and nutritious snack. So look no further than Wonderful Pistachios. Each 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios contains 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. And it's one of the highest protein nuts out there on the market. But that's not all. Pistachios are also known for their fiber and their better for you unsaturated fats, which may help you keep feeling fuller longer. But Gordon, as you know, that's not the best part about this. As you can see, we have a variety of flavors, different sizes that Gordon is showing us. It's the perfect go-to snack to enjoy with your family, with your friends, as you're going in between meetings, picking your kiddos up from the carpool line, you name it. Make sure you grab your Wonderful Pistachios because it is the go-to snack. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these green wonders can lighten up and power up your day.
Pistachios sent us these, Wonderful Pistachios sent them in this box.
Yes.
And now I'm really excited.
I'm very excited.
But can we eat them? I don't think we can eat them.
I think the flavor I'm looking... So we have salt and pepper. There's roasted and salted.
I want seasoned salted.
I want the red one. What's the red one?
That's the chili one.
Chili. I'm a sweet...
But I think we can't eat them till December because they're our props now.
Yes, they're the props for right now.
Anyway, thank you, Wonderful Pistachios. Let's get right into it. Let's start with the headline coming off of the past few days.
Yes.
Officially, Sha'Carri Richardson and Noah Lyles are going to be in Prefontaine in Eugene 2 weeks from now for the Diamond League final. I'm assuming they're running both the 100, right? I think that's what the press release said. Probably should have done double check, but they're running the 100. And this is going to be interesting in two different ways. Mm-hmm. Notably, Sha'Carri, obviously, world champion now. She had the best year of her career. And we talked about it, how her career was probably at the lowest point when she got unfairly disqualified from the Olympics, comes back, runs Prefontaine to get dead last.
Yes.
All the Jamaicans beat her. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of memes going around, a lot of trolling, a lot of LOLs.
Mm-hmm.
But now, She has the ability to have the last laugh 2 years later. Yes. She's going to be there, likely racing some of the Jamaicans. I don't think Shelly Ann Fraser-Pryce will be there, but Sharika Jackson might run in it. She's in the 200. She might run the 100. So it's going to be interesting to see the full two-year arc for Sha'Carri Richardson from bottom of the bottom to now top of the top.
Yes.
But she still has to win the race. She still has to go there and win it, but she's going to be the heavy favorite.
Yeah. I feel like she's going to go into this meet with not as much probably pressure. I feel like during the time, remember how she always says, like, I'm not back, I'm better. You know, just thinking about that year at the Olympics, like, just everything that she has been going through to then now have to show up on that race day, put together something. She, I feel like, has finally blossomed into this wonderful butterfly, and we're seeing the fruition of her labors right now. And I just see her not really thinking about that Prefontaine race. I feel like she's going to go into this with, you know, her head held high, as she should. As you mentioned, world champion, going to be facing some of the best, which she's already conquered and has already been so far this season in the 100 meters. So I feel like she's just going to go into this race and just continue doing what she's doing, just having fun with it.
It would be kind of funny, though, if she goes there and loses. It would be like, holy crap, like, because she's going to be overwhelming favorite. I'm going to look at, Sharika Jackson will be there, Talu will be there, and then those are really the only two that have a shot of beating her. Basically Talu and Jackson. Talu could win. I could see Talu getting the upset. She's very consistent. She didn't have the perfect world championship final, did not get a medal. Jackson's good. So while Sha'Carri will be the heavy favorite, if Sha'Carri doesn't have an A-minus game, and Sharika or Talu have A-plus games, A-plus races, it's a chance for the upset. So it's not a guarantee that she'll win, but she's got to win. I mean,
absolutely. I just think her mindset's a little bit different going into this year's race versus the Olympic year.
Yeah. I hope that she embraces the circle of being here in 2021.
Yes.
And I hope that she, like, I don't know. Is there a way she could, like, she should change, like, her profile picture to that meme with Shelly Ann behind her, like, while she's doing the post-race interview?
Oh, the post-race interview.
And just have that be her profile picture for the week leading up to Prefontaine. And then when she wins, she updates the profile picture.
Interesting.
Let's do a little full circle.
Get
people going.
Oh, my goodness. That's interesting. I kind of forgot about that meme, but I know what meme you were talking about.
I wanted to make a t-shirt out of it.
You did?
I wanted to.
It's not too late.
I can still make the t-shirt. Memes live forever.
Yes. You have a whole week.
And they're called memes, right?
Yeah.
Not memes.
I say memes.
Yeah.
Now, do you say GIF or JIF?
It's supposed to be JIF, but I say GIF.
I say GIF. Okay.
Because I decide how I speak this
it's
language.
A G, so.
Yeah, and it's a G.
Like, if it was JIF, I feel like it would be a J.
There was a very notable track and field coach, and former athlete, who used the word meme and called them memes.
No,
memes. I was like, that's... Memes. I think it showed his age, memes. All right, let's go, though, into the men's side. Noah Lyles, who originally announced that he wasn't going to run the Diamond League final.
Yep.
And then there was some talk about, hey, man, you're Noah freaking Lyles. You just won the 1, the 2, and the 4x1. You got to run the Diamond League final. We need one last hurrah from you. And he then tweeted out that he's actually running the Diamond League final.
Mm-hmm.
But then I did some little bit of research. And the thing is, Prefontaine is not an invitational. It's a final that you have to qualify for.
Correct.
So you can't just be, I'm the best in the world, you let me on the track. You have to actually run the Diamond League races to get into the final.
Correct.
And if we bring up the current standings in the Diamond League, so Fred Curley's ranked 1, Omanyala's 2, Simbene 3, Johan Blake 4, Tobogo 5, Thompson of Jamaica 6, Bromell 7, Hartman 8, Christian Coleman 9, Noah Lyles 10. 8 people make the final. So in order for Lyles to actually be on the track, he needs 2 guys ahead of him to scratch.
Yeah. Now, does that also mean Christian Coleman would get in then?
Yeah, Christian Coleman would get in before him, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're tied.
But technically, standing-wise.
But standing-wise, I think there's the tiebreaker is most recent win. I think that's the tiebreaker.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I'm not quite sure. But looking at this result, you need, I think Bromell might scratch, right? Because he's not healthy.
Correct.
So
I feel like that would be the person I would eliminate first.
So if Bromell scratches, that's still...
You still need one other person to scratch.
And it would be hilarious if Joshua Hartman from Germany gets into the Diamond League final over Noah Lyles because he finished third in Sweden and sixth in Monaco. And because he has those two results, it's ranked higher than Noah Lyles. Now, the reason why we're in this situation is Noah Lyles only ran one Diamond League 100-meter dash.
Correct.
And Christian Coleman actually only ran one as well. They both won theirs.
Most recent, though, like you said.
And the fact that Coleman and Lyles only competed in one Diamond League 100-meter race...
And they're about to be in a final.
...shows how much the top athletes actually don't care about the qualification process. The fact that Noah Lyles is like, I'm just going to run one... I'm like, oh, yeah. I guess I can make the final. I ran one Diamond League race. And I don't think these athletes actually think about it, the Prefontaine, as a qualification. They look at it as, oh, you know, it's pre.
Yeah.
I'm one of the best runners in the world. They're going to let me run.
Right.
So, I don't know. I tweeted at Noah saying, hey, man, are you qualified? He didn't respond. So, I did my due diligence. I try to find out, but I don't know. Let's see what the chat has to say. I'm going to bring up the chat.
I don't know. I think it's just... Yeah, it's just interesting. Because like you said, it's not... Because at first my brain was like, maybe it's because he was the world champion. But that's a completely different area. Like, that doesn't even impact, like, who makes it into this final. That was my only reasoning. I was like, maybe they're just going to sneak Noah Lyles in because of that.
Yeah. So, we'll find out. But... Noah Lyles in the final. We'll talk more about it as we get closer to pre. I think are you going to pre?
I will be at pre.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll have people there at pre. See if Noah Lyles can continue that momentum. But that momentum has a little bit of a potential. I don't think it's a guarantee that Noah's going to win that race. Because Christian Coleman just ran the world lead.
Yes.
9.83.
Mm-hmm.
You saw Thompson run a 9.8. as well, getting second in the Diamond League race in China.
Right.
So I always thought that Coleman was the potential guy who could win the world title. He did not. He ended up finishing on the outside. But the guy just ran 9.83. Like, where was this for Coleman a week ago?
Yeah. And I think that
or 2 weeks ago.
You know, I talked about this on the podcast last week with you, or whenever we did the last one, that I was like, there's a lot of pressure going into Worlds. And I feel like now that, you know, Worlds is over, it's just kind of like this load is just off your shoulders a little bit. You can kind of just run freely. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter if he gets first, last, you know, middle of the pack here in this 100. So I feel like Christian Coleman can just do his thing, puts together a great race. But the only way anybody's going to be able to take down Christian Coleman is if they can close. Because we already know Christian Coleman has the rocket start. He's the best starter. We saw it in the 4x1 at Worlds. Don't remove him off the first leg. So in order for anybody to take Coleman down, you got to be able to close.
And Lyles can close.
Right.
He figured it out. He figured out be in the mix with 50 meters to go, and then you can win it. But it's just interesting seeing the way the end of the season has kind of unfolded.
Yeah.
Coleman just didn't time his perfect peak at the right moment because now he runs 9.83. I could see Coleman winning the Diamond League.
I can see it too.
Like, I could see Lyles lose, and it's like, whoa. Because Lyles, let's remember, yes, he's the 100-meter world champion, but he lost a bunch of 100 meters.
Yes, that is very true.
He was not, like, a dominant 100-meter figure. He was dominant in the two, but he wasn't dominant in the one. He was just dominant in the 100 in the one race that mattered most.
Right, exactly. He put it all together when it counted.
So I could see a situation where Coleman upsets
I wouldn't. Lyles. Do we call it an upset, though?
Yeah, you gotta, yeah, it's an upset. It's an upset.
It's Christian Coleman.
I know, but it's an upset. Noah Lyles he's just won 3 gold medals.
I'm putting this out there. I would not be surprised if Christian Coleman
wins. Oh, I won't be surprised either.
I'd be like, cool.
I think it's actually likely.
Yes.
I might even pick it.
Oh, we're not. No,
I'm
Gordon.
I might pick it.
I'm stopping you right now. We're not
I'm
doing
gonna pick
this
it.
Again.
I thought Coleman was going to win the 100 at Worlds. Now he just wins 9.83. Now I'm going back. He's going to Diamond League final. That's what I really meant. When I predicted him to win the 100 meters, I meant he's going to win the last 100 meters, which will be the Diamond League final.
Okay.
One other note, Curly gets third Now we saw Curly lost an earlier Diamond League. Then we see Curly not make the final at Worlds. And now we see him get third here. Something's up.
It's interesting to see, just because we know the talent that Fred has within him. And I've seen him race a handful of times to know, like, when he looks very sharp and when he doesn't. And just how he looked in China, he did not look sharp. Similar to how he looked at Worlds. Like, Worlds, I remember telling you, I was like, something doesn't seem right. Like, something seems off with how Fred is going through these rounds. And when obviously we saw him not make that final, and it was just kind of, I feel like we're still on that track right now with Fred. I don't know. Some things just need to sharpen up a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely not what we thought we were going to see. Mm-hmm. We saw him he wasn't running fast times early on in the year, but he was winning, you know, close races. You're like, all right, he even said it, like, I don't need to run fast now, I need to run fast later. He said that early in the season. So, but maybe there actually was something going on that he was confident that, like, hey, just give me a couple months and eventually I'll be firing on all cylinders. And it just didn't happen. Now, maybe he also could just, like, be a gamer and show up in that Diamond League final and get the win. I mean, that'd be interesting if Fred Curly were to win the Diamond League final over Noah Lyles, and then you could be like, all right, head to head, if Fred Curly is 1-0 against Lyles, what does that mean? You know, if you...
That's why it gets really interesting after World Championships, because now you're thinking, dang, if Fred Curly was in this final, how would have Worlds turned out to be? You know what I mean?
What's Fred Curly's record? Did he race Lyles at all this year in the 100? I'm going to look it up.
I'm not too sure. But yeah, it just gets really interesting once we get, like, meets after World Championships. And, like, you're just expecting the people at Worlds who are, you know, placing and winning, that the next race that they win or go to, you're expecting them to give you the same exact race, but each race is going to be different.
Yeah, so Curly and Lyles have yet to race in the 100 this year. This will be the first time. So Curly could walk away, be like, I'm 1-0 against the world champ.
Okay.
Which makes me technically the world champ.
In order for that to happen, like, Fred needs to put the best race of his whole entire season on the line.
For sure.
In Oregon. Like, best start, because again, you're going to have Christian Coleman. You got to be able to have a great finish. Like, all the pieces literally need to fit.
Actually, Fred Curly's lifetime, 4-0 against Noah Lyles in the 100 meter dash.
Okay, so can you make 5-0?
Can you make 5-0, or is he going to 4-1?
4-1.
I like how I was so high on Lyles. I'm like, all right, he did it. He proved us all wrong. And now he's 100% the fastest man in the world. But now I'm flirting, like, hey, maybe Curly will beat him, go 1-0. Hey, maybe Coleman's going to beat him and get the last laugh. It's hard for me to, like, stay in love with the one athlete at the top. I'm always like, maybe we'll lose.
I almost feel like do you feel like the World Championships was a fluke almost? Like, it was just that one race?
No.
For Noah?
No, I don't think
it's a fluke. In the 100.
No. I mean, you could say any race is a fluke. I think it's also disrespectful to call something a fluke.
Yeah.
But flukes are real, but they're also mean to say. Because, you know, I think that, you know, I say that in all sports. I mean, it's a fluke that Kansas City beat the Eagles. Like, the Eagles should have won the Super Bowl. That was a fluke. But that's not what happened.
Right.
Flukes aren't what is recorded in the record books. That'll be fun, though, if we looked at all of our 100-meter champions and 200-meter champions, mm-hmm. and we got to just say, fluke, not fluke, 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 not fluke, not fluke, fluke, fluke.
And reorganize it.
Reorganize it. We shouldn't even have races. We should just decide who would have won.
Okay, so are you calling right now in this 100 meters Christian Coleman? Like, who's your pick?
I think Coleman.
Okay. Okay.
Coleman's ready. He did this thing after the China win, which is an homage to what Lyles did, which was an homage to what Bolt did. And then Bolt's just sitting back being like, I'm the fastest man in the world, so whatever. So I'm excited for that. We'll talk more about, we'll preview that as we get closer to Prefontaine. Other sprint news, Hansel Parchment ran 12.96 in the 110 hurdles, beat Holloway. Holloway actually got third. Roberts got second. Mm-hmm. Now, Parchment, you know, Olympic champ, he got a medal, he got second at Worlds. So this is like a sorry, struggling words. This is a normal performance that I would expect out of Parchment. He should be able to run 12-9. Mm-hmm. The thing, though, is seeing Holloway lose, it does show, as great as Holloway's been, he's won 3 global golds with a silver at the Olympics. His greatness is there.
Oh, he's proven that, yeah.
But there are still some holes.
There are.
And the holes are, he's prone to get beat.
Yeah.
In
you Can don't... we say that about Ingebrigtsen, too?
Yeah.
Josh Kerr, like...
Well, no, Ingebrigtsen does not lose in the regular season. Jakob does not lose, yes. Jakob, now with 2 losses to the Brits, is a little weird. But Holloway, like, he lost that Devin Allen race last year. Mm-hmm. He lost to Broadbell a time. He lost a Parchment at the Olympic Games. Now he loses this race to Roberts and Parchment. Mm-hmm. It's just like, dude, you're the best. You can run 12-9 in your sleep. Mm-hmm. You've won 3 global golds. Why do you keep on having these weird upset moments that we can never predict? Like, how does
or
he lose his race?
Parchment and Roberts just were that much better that day. Well, like, maybe, like, Holloway was where he's supposed to be, but they just did a little bit better.
No, I don't think that. I think Holloway underperformed.
We're talking about Olympic champion here.
I think Holloway underperformed as opposed to Parchment overperforming.
Okay, that's fair.
Time Holloway loses, it's an underperformance. It's not an overperformance from the competition.
Okay. Well, I feel like I said earlier, that each race is going to be completely different. We don't know what was going on with Grant going into this race.
I mean, it's in China. It's travel. He's like celebrating winning 3 golds. It's like...
Yeah. He didn't win it counted.
Yeah.
Like, world championship is like the end game.
Which kind of just ruins...
And that was it.
That kind of ruins, though, the point of these races. Because you know Holloway's like...
We talked about this.
Just not...
We talked about it. It just should be world championships.
Yeah.
And, like, that's it.
That should be it. We should stop. End the podcast. Stop.
Well, no, we go into cross country.
Going to cross country.
We don't stop the podcast. We just switch seasons.
Yeah, just switch seasons.
Yes.
So, but my reaction there is that Holloway, as great as he's been, mm-hmm. and as great as he continues to be, he's prone to be beat.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Typically, greatness doesn't lose, but Holloway finds ways to lose these random races here and there. And man, he does not want to lose next year because...
Oh, no.
If he goes on winning every world championship but losing every Olympics, that would be like the worst.
Oh, gosh. I don't wish that upon anybody. Yeah, no. That's tough.
What if he...
That's really hard. Imagine winning every single gold at a world championships. Then you get to the Olympics.
And then he wins in 2025. So he'll have 4 golds, and then he wins in 2027, 5 golds. Then he loses in 2028.
No,
so
I don't wish that. I'm not putting that out there.
He'll have five golds and 3 silvers. And those 3 silvers are all at the Olympics. And the 5 golds are at global. Even though it's the exact same race, there's no difference. It's the same people. It's just a different year. Anyway.
That would hurt.
That would suck. Would you rather have 5 global golds, world championship golds, and 3 Olympic silvers? Or 3 Olympic golds, and that's it.
Oh, that's hard.
3 Olympic golds.
I would say 3 Olympic golds.
Over 5 world championship golds and 3 Olympic silvers.
Actually, no.
It should be, yeah.
Because I feel like if I was to get the golds at the world championships and silvers at the Olympics, at least I'm showcasing that I can make a team every single time.
Yeah.
And I can medal every single time.
But when you talk to the average person on the street, they'll be like, oh, you never won the Olympics? He says, no, I won this thing called the world.
The average person.
I won this thing called the world championship.
Okay, what would you pick? I feel like I would say.
I would pick the 5.
5? Okay.
5 golds. Because I would not care that.
Because I think for the most, honestly, the average person, they get really excited to hear you're an Olympian. They don't care if, like, you're an Olympic gold medalist.
This is what you say. I'm an Olympian and I won global gold.
They'd be like, wow.
And they'd think that meant Olympic gold, but you said global gold. You just like sneak. You put the word "I'm an Olympian" in the beginning of the phrase, and I'm a global gold medalist.
Yeah,
and they're like, "Oh, okay." And so they go home,
and they tell everybody, and "I just met an Olympic gold medalist."
I just met an Olympic gold medalist.
Yeah,
and you didn't lie. I bet you Holloway does that. I bet you says, "Yeah, I'm an Olympian and I'm a global gold medalist."
I highly doubt.
I'm an Olympian and three-time gold medalist.
Grant does that, but yeah, but like the average person, I think it's really exciting when they hear that.
You don't even have to say global gold. You just say, I'm an Olympian and I'm a gold medalist.
You can just say Olympian, period.
I'm an Olympian and I'm a three-time gold medalist.
We should go out in the streets off, you know, here in Austin and be like,
I'm an Olympian.
I was about to say, well, I'm a world.
We're writing.
I'm a world.
We're writing Holloway's story. Yeah. We're writing Holloway's story beforehand. He has the ability to get the gold in Paris. But
yes.
Either way, he's great, so. Let's talk a little bit about some distance stuff. Oh, no, one more sprint news. Elaine Thompson-Herah, she ran 10.92.
Yep.
Very impressive, especially from where her season began.
To where she is now.
Where she could not even break 11 seconds. Then she runs 11 flat. Now she runs 10.92. And while the rest of the women's 100-meter field kind of moved on without her because they're not going to wait around for her to get back into her true form.
Mm-hmm.
You got to think that if Elaine Thompson-Herah can get this going, get this momentum going, she will be back to being one of the main factors in 2024
mm-hmm.
to go up against Sha'Carri and Sharika and Shelly-Ann.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think that this is sign that 2024 for her is going to be a good year? Or do you think we still have yet to see enough for her to be in that 10-6 10-7 world?
As we know, a lot can happen in a year.
Yeah,
so much can happen in a year. I think this is going to help her confidence. I think breaking 11 is like that ultimate confidence booster for her right now. Saying, okay, I can finally dip underneath that mark. She did it, 10.92. And I feel like going into her fall training, going into 2024, she's going to build upon that. So I think she's ending her season on a high note versus like where she was in the beginning. It's just going to catapult her forward, for sure.
If we bring up this Diamond League standings graphic, she's currently ranked 13th. There's one more Diamond League 100. She's running the 100 in Brussels.
Yeah.
Let's assume she wins that.
Okay.
She gets 8 points. So she'll go from 6 points plus eight. That gives her 14 points, which puts her tied for eighth.
Do we know if any of the people in front of her are
In front of her, like Zoe Hobbs is in front of her. So if she got second, Zoe Hobbs would stay above her because she'll get to 18 points. Mm-hmm. So there is a... There's a lot of math, but it's... Because I would want to see her in that Diamond League final to see, like, all right, let's see where you measure up with Tolu, Jackson, and Sha'Carri.
Yeah.
You're not going to beat them, but if you can, like, show, like, you're closing in, that's going to get... But I think we're going to need some people to scratch for Thompson-Herah to get into the Diamond League final at last minute. Because even with a win in Brussels, she might still be on the outside looking.
And just even looking at the standings right now, a lot of these are big, well, names that we know. Like Tolu, Sharika Jackson, Sha'Carri, obviously we know. Like Dina Asher-Smith, T.T. Terry. Like these are individuals I can see, like...
Not scratching. Yeah.
So Sabota is also a talented individual, too. So it's just like...
Yeah.
Don't see him scratching, you know?
That concludes the sprint section of our podcast.
Yes.
So all you sprint fans, you can log off. We're going to go into distance news. And all the distance fans, welcome.
Welcome.
That's one thing I'm learning podcast. Is there's three types of... Four?
Four?
There are four types of track fans.
Okay, let's hear it.
There are distance track fans.
Okay.
Which are a unique species. There's the sprint-only track fans, which I love. They're my favorite.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to power rank the track. I'm going to power rank track fans right now. Track fan power rankings presented by Wonderful Pistachios. New segment. All right. Gordon's top five track fans.
I thought you said four.
Well, I'm adding the fifth because there's five.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Number five.
Let me take notes. Five.
Is the European track fan who just like enjoys... The element. They're just like very casual. The casual European track fan. And by casual European track fans, like, they just enjoy watching people run in circles. They enjoy watching people jump, throw. They just look at the athletic. They call it athletics. They don't call it track and field. those type of people.
Okay.
They're very casual, though. They're not, like, diehard. They're just, hey, what do you want to do this weekend? Oh, let's go to the track meet. That's number five.
Okay.
Number four are the field event fans and race walk.
You're putting them together?
They're all different people, but together they form a union. And they are great fans because they're dedicated to one specific event, like their diehard shot put or their diehard javelin. They really go all in on one specific event. Now, they're only ranked fourth because I don't look at... They're not... They're just very specific. They're very niche.
Okay.
About just one thing. And so, like...
Isn't that what Sprinter fans are like?
No, Sprinter fans are not as niche.
Okay.
No, no. If you... Like, Sprinter fan, they're involved... You know, because Sprinter fans are in the one, the four, the hurdles. Like, they're getting a little... The four by ones, the four by fours. They're getting all over it. Shot put fan, they're just talking about Ryan Crouser and his greatness. Right? Pole vault fans, they just love Mondo. So,
okay. So
field
three.
Event fans are three. Number three is distance fans.
They're interesting.
They are a unique element because they take it too seriously. They get a little too intense. It's like a religion to them.
Okay.
Distance fans look at track and field as a religion. It's like the way diehard like football fans and basketball fans, they care about the nuances of every distance runner, and they get up, you know, doping news is like the most important thing to them. They always want to count someone out. They always want to measure. It's like, what have you done for me lately? It's a very like cutthroat reaction, right?
Okay. Yes.
And it's very, they're also very biased. They're very like, they never want to let go of someone. They always think that person still has an opportunity, still believes, right? They're very biased.
Okay.
Which is like the way a Sixers fan is. I'm very biased. Or Eagles fan, very biased.
Okay.
So they're good fans because they're biased and they're religious about it.
Okay. So it's two.
Number two is sprint fans.
I'm curious about number one.
Yeah, you'll see. Number one.
Gosh, wait.
Number one. So sprint fans are the best. I love this. I have a heart for number two. They're the best because they talk a lot of shit. And that's the best thing about it. That's the best thing about sprint fans. They talk all the shit. And it's
Man.
Great. They're passionate about it. And they'll talk shit.
Yeah.
Get proven wrong. And then the next day, they're back to talking shit again.
Okay.
They don't let losses affect them. Like, whatever. I still, you know, who cares? Noah lost.
I'm curious that you say that about sprint fans.
What? You don't think they...
No, go ahead.
Am I wrong in that assessment?
I don't know.
You don't think they talk shit?
I feel like I'm a sprint fan.
There's some very interesting corners of the internet and around the sprint community that talk a lot of...
I'm trying to wrap my head around what's number one at this point.
One I'm saving for the best.
Is it the Gordon fans?
No. No. There are no Gordon fans.
Wait.
Okay, European, so to recap. So
European track fan, casual, they enjoy it. Four, you have it with race walk, field events. They're very in tune.
They're really
niche.
Committed to an event that's not as popular.
Three's distance fans.
Because they are biased and religious.
Okay. Two.
Sprint fans, because they talk their shit.
And they come back.
And they take L's, but then they just bounce back up.
All right, so number one is... Drum roll.
Okay, I'm going to be honest.
You didn't have a one.
I did have a... I was trying to come up with my one while
I was doing my list. Because you were like... You started out with four, and then you added five.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, okay.
And so there's... My one, I'm going to go one of two ways.
One should be like... The Hayward Field fans, because those are like, I feel like they're a combination of all of
yeah, but they're a little, come on, a little obnoxious. They're like, oh,
so Hayward Field.
Yeah,
they
but
they're diehard track and field
fans. Yeah, but
fans.
I don't like the elitists of it.
I'm trying to figure out what number one could be.
Okay, number one is one of two. There's two ones.
Okay.
One is funny. One is everyone has the track fan in their friend group, or just like who knows nothing about track, who's like the
you rated this from.
But I always
types
think it's
of fans.
But no no, wait. Basically, what I'm saying is the track fan who knows nothing about it and is very just naive and are like just they're just.
I'm tossing that one
dumb.
Out. Tossing that one
yeah,
out. What's the other one?
Okay, yeah, we should toss that one out. I just think it's funny when I talk about track with someone who doesn't know anything about track, and it's like, it feels like
the conversations are definitely interesting.
Yeah, and that's it's enjoyment
like,
for me.
Like, explaining a 400 meters to someone is quite interesting. Yeah. I'm like, when people ask me what event did I do, I'm like, okay, 400 meters is one lap.
Yeah.
I did 200, so yeah, half of that.
Yeah. And then they ask you what your mile time is.
Yes, then that's the next question. What's your mile
time? I think it's fun to have those conversations. It reminds you that our sport is niche, and it's okay.
Okay, wait, what was the other one?
Oh, so the real number one?
Well, no, you said you had a two. You said the...
A second number one.
Yeah, second number one. What was the other one? Because we tossed out the...
So it's a subset. It's a subset of the sprint fans. It's the Jamaicans.
I think we should just have Hayward Field fans.
It's the Jamaicans.
Okay.
It's Jamaicans.
Jamaicans. Okay. Yeah. Okay, that one can stay.
Yeah. Because so they are...
Number one?
They are... What all track fans should
Hayward,
be like.
Hayward Field fans.
No, Hayward Field fans should not be on the list. This is my list. I made the list. This is the Gordon Mack presented by Wonderful Pistachios list. So, recap. European casual fans. Diehard, niche field event racewalk fans.
Yep.
Distance fans because they're biased and religious. Sprint fans because they talk all this shit and they come back for more.
I'm really curious about what the chat thinks.
And then number one is Jamaica. That's it.
Okay.
Those are the rules.
And I really think Hayward Field fans should be.
No, they're not on my list.
They should be.
That's on your list.
It's on my list then.
That's on your list. Okay. All right. Let's
move on now.
Speaking of one of those fans, in the sprint world, I mean, the distance world, Addie Wiley of NAIA, she's going into her sophomore year. She ran out of her mind in the 800. She ran the second fastest all time mark for an active college athlete, running 157 in the 800, second to Athingbo's 155. She's going to run the Diamond League in Brussels in the 1500 now. Addie Wiley, she kind of came out of nowhere.
Yes.
And we, you know, I mean, obviously there's conversations about her coach and the situations that are happening with, you know, Coach Johnson and all that stuff. And we don't want to get into that part of it. I was more and more talking about the athlete side of it.
Yeah.
She's a teenager, right? She's 19? She's probably 19, I'm assuming. I don't think she's turned 20. She just ran 157. And
she's 19.
She's 19. She just ran 157. Her career is still much ahead of her. This is something that, you know, people are going to need to be on the look for her in 24 and 25.
Yeah.
Where I see, if you saw this improvement in year one, year two and three is going to be massive, and Addie Wiley is someone that's going to, for like it or not, is going to be in the picture in the women's distance side for the U.S. in both the 8 and the 15. I think that she probably should focus on the 15 because I think breaking up a Athingbo in the 8 is a gargantuan task.
Mm-hmm.
Be throwing 157 speed with 4-flat 1,500-meter capabilities, she should be able to run in the 350s.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring up Addie Wiley because, again, I heavily worked with mile splits, so I am very familiar with the high schoolers that are competing, and Addie Wiley just recently graduated, and she came out, I don't want to say came out of nowhere, but she wasn't an individual. She was at the top of our radar, but she wasn't someone that, like, blew me away quite yet until the very end of her senior year, and she just, like, put all the, it was like a snap of the fingers, like a sparkle moment where she was able to put everything together at one time during the outdoor season before she went off to college. So when I saw this 157, I was like, Addie Wiley's doing this again. Like, she kind of like sneaks in there when you least expect it and then puts out like an enormous mark. So the fact that she went from a 204 to win outdoor nationals in 2022 to 157 is like insane.
It is a pretty crazy drop in one year.
Yeah.
People normally don't go that fast that quick.
Right. So when I saw this, I was like, Addie Wiley? Like, our girl Addie Wiley from Indiana did this? Like, it's so incredible.
Yeah, I mean, she ran 159 prior to this, beginning of August. So it was like a second and a half PB
right.
from her 159. And you kind of you could argue she was probably under raced for a collegiate because she was in the NAIA world where she didn't really have to push herself. I mean, she was winning national championships in 204 and 414
mm-hmm.
at the NAIA. So, like, her season, while she is, has a long collegiate season,
mm-hmm.
I think she didn't really have much of a peak that these NCAA athletes had mm-hmm. in indoors and outdoors.
Right.
That her peak really was USA trials and the month of August and September.
Right, right.
So we're seeing kind of where that comes. But she's now run 403 for the 1500 with a 157. She's probably going to flirt with breaking four in the Brussels Diamond League. And she's going to be someone to watch for it. And, you know, you see Elle Puryear is going to come back from pregnancy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Corey McGee, she finds a way to make every team. Nikki Hiltz, we know what Hiltz has been doing. Making teams and running fast times. Cranny can run a fast 1500. Schweizer will be coming back from injury. Who else made the 1500? Oh, Sinclair Johnson.
Yeah.
So the women's 15 is going to be a hard team to make at the Olympics.
Oh, absolutely. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, who would...
Oh, I don't
Olympic
even know.
Olympic pick.
Oh, I don't even know.
I mean...
That's hard. You just named like 10 athletes. I'm like, yep.
I can see... Yep. I can see Wiley. I think it could be Nikki... Wiley and McGee, which is crazy to not put Sinclair Johnson on the team.
That was
or
a name that literally.
But then if
head.
If I think Mo does a double,
I don't know.
I don't know if she's. Do you think she's gonna still do that double?
No.
You think that was they? I think a thing and Sydney are gonna do the doubles because it's the Olympic year, or maybe saving their double for 2028. I don't know. But
yeah, let's just save it for 4 years down.
We'll save it 4 years. But yeah, I would look at Wiley as an equal shot of making the Olympic team as a Sinclair Johnson and a Corey McGee.
Okay. I'm just trying to wrap my head around that. I'm just so shocked with this 157. And Addy is definitely a strong runner in that 1500. I don't know. She's just sneaky good. It's just like when it clicks... Gordon, it clicks.
Yeah.
That's the thing with Addy. When all the pieces to that puzzle are put together properly, Addy Wiley is a whole nother beast. I can see it happening.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah. All right. One other thing. Jakob Ingebrigtsen, we don't need to talk much about it. He's running the 2K in the Diamond League in Brussels, trying to break the world record. I know nothing about, one, how to run a 2K, one, what the world record is.
444.79.
Yeah, what does that even mean? Is that fast? Is that slow? Is that... Who cares?
Well, it's one of the oldest track records set back in 1999.
Because it's not a real record. It's a fake record.
It's not
a fake record.
Oh, my goodness. All
right, I'm going to go run the 2,100-meter world record.
Okay.
Do it.
You're going to do it right outside
yeah,
of
the
go outside. Track out
there? It's not a real record. I'm not going to get excited about it. I'm not going to give him bonus points for it. Like... Jakob, just go run a 1500 and break the 1500-meter world record. Don't do this 2K shit.
Well, he wants to do a 2K.
Literally 2K. This is like a
he
video
He wants
game.
To do a 2K.
Why?
Let the man do a 2K.
Do you think he's going to walk around and... do you think he's going to be like, well, he's got the 2K world record.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to win the 1500 global
title.
He can
say he's a world record holder.
But I won that 2K
Do you know how many wild world records are out there? This is something that Ashley Titchens and I talk about quite often, actually. There are some wild ones out there.
Anyway.
Moving on, should we talk cross country?
Let's talk some cross country before we sign off. Now, cross country season really doesn't start yet. I mean, technically, it started this past weekend. We had some time trial type results.
Mm-hmm.
But the real season doesn't start till like September 23rd, where we're going to see a lot of top teams compete in Virginia. And then we'll get more information in October. But like it, school started, so we got to start ranking them. And so we ranked. We got our rankings in for preseason on the men's and women's sides team. We'll start the men's team rankings. And surprise, surprise, NAU preseason ranked number one.
You were repping the shirt the other day in the office.
Yeah. Well,
I was proud.
They're good. They're good at running. But on the men's side, there really isn't much surprise. NAU's one, BYU's two, Oklahoma State three, Stanford four. Those were also the podium teams last year. We moved BYU up to 2 over Oklahoma State because Oklahoma State lost one of their top returners. BYU returned everyone. Kenneth Rooks looks even better. So they throw in Kenny Rooks, who made the world team in the steeple. BYU will be NAU's number one challenger, and I don't even think it's going to be close. I don't think Oklahoma State or Stanford will be in the mix with NAU and BYU. This is going to be a repeat of, dare I say it, the 2019 season where NAU lost.
Gordon, how dare you?
NAU was going for the four-peat. They went into that season as the best team on paper, and then they lost to BYU. NAU now going for another four-peat. They're going to enter this season as the best team on paper, and BYU is going to be a team to challenge them. Now, I'm not saying the same result's going to happen, but there's going to be a lot of PTSD.
You think so?
For Mike Smith and NAU, because he'd be like, it's BYU again. Crap, we're going for the four-peat. Uh-oh, they're going to be good. So I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but we could see some deja vu, or we could see NAU finding a way to overcome that deja vu and get the win and pull off the four-peat. NAU ran at their home opener, and they ran better than they did any other year before. So they look like they're firing on all cylinders. I guess Wisconsin is the one team ranked 5th. They're kind of can sneak up into the mix, maybe get on the podium. And I think the big surprise team that we have in our top 10 is Texas.
Yeah.
Texas, they got a transfer from Stanford, Devin Hart, who's be All-American. But Texas is our kind of non-conventional top 10 team that we have ranked 7th on the men's side. Let's move over to the women's side. Now, the women's side is interesting. Women's rankings, NC State's going to stay 1.
Mm-hmm.
They won last year. They returned pretty much everyone. They got Caitlin Tui, Kelsey Camille, 1-2. They're looking good. They're going to be the favorites. Florida, the team we have ranked 5th.
Yeah.
They weren't ranked at all. They didn't qualify for the meet, but they got a ton of New Mexico transfers. They got an Alabama transfer. They have the recipe to put together 4 strong women behind Parker Valby to potentially podium.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not going to be easy because some other teams in the mix. NAU looks good. They were 6th last year. They returned a bunch of women. Colorado was 11th last year, but they add in some transfers. Notably, they have a transfer from New Mexico. They got Marley Starlipper from NC State. They're going to be in the mix.
And they also have a great incoming class.
And they have good incoming class.
Yeah.
One team that's not listed here is New Mexico, because Joe Franklin left New Mexico, so all the women also left, and they all got one went to Northern Arizona, one went to Colorado, one went to Florida. So all the New Mexico women are basically the reason why the Floridas, NAUs, and Colorados.
It just all kind of all shifted a little bit.
Shifted to go up against NC State. So yeah. NC State was like, all right, we beat New Mexico. And then New Mexico's like, what if we just divide everyone up and go into Colorado, NAU, and Florida and see if that one of those three can beat NC State.
Nice little game plan.
Yeah. And then the big surprise here, which the coaches did not really agree with, is I put Oregon 2nd. They were 14th last year.
Yeah, what was your thoughts on
so
this one?
So, the thought is, there's some eligibility issues, I'll admit, because I'm not sure the 100% the transfer rules, but there were some late additions to the Oregon roster, notably like Mia Barnett from mm-hmm. UCLA, who is a top 20 runner. And if Oregon gets another top 20 runner, you subtract their 5th woman and throwing her as a number 1 woman, it makes their team good enough to be a podium team.
Okay.
Now, there's likelihood that she won't be eligible, but things change. Eligibility comes in and out. Yeah, I can run all of a sudden. So I looked at it. I was like, I look at their incoming transfers, international and collegiate-wise.
Mm-hmm.
You look at their the way they put 3 women in the 1,500-meter final.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 6K. This isn't a 10K.
Right.
It's going to be a sprint. If it starts off slow in a sprint, Oregon's going to have...
I love how you said a 6K is a sprint. That's great.
It is a sprint. It's a sprint. They're going to jog for 4K and then run a 2K and try to break Jakob Ingebrigtsen's world record. But Oregon has, they don't have the talent when it comes to 5K, 10K, but they do have the talent when it comes to the mile and 3K. And I think, you know, Jerry Schumacher and Shalane Flanagan, they're great, they're good coaches, and I think they're going to find a way to take the talent that they have and put together a podium caliber team. And I think they're kind of overlooked right now. I think they're kind of just looking, oh, they got 14th last year. But, like, they have a bunch of women run sub 410. It's like, that means something. I know it's 1,500. It's not the 6K. But I do believe mile times matter. You see great female milers every year find a way to finish All-American who aren't really notorious at running fast 5Ks. And I think that could happen with Oregon because they have a bunch. They don't just have one. They're not relying on just one person. They got some depth. Now, if Mia Barnett doesn't run, then they're probably not going to finish second, but they could still finish top six. So we'll see. Once we see them run their full squad at Bill Dillinger, we'll make an assessment.
Okay. So stay tuned.
I went on a long rant. I did the rankings.
No, I appreciate the breakdown.
I'm educating you. Yeah.
No, that was great because I know there were a lot of questions on some of these rankings. So
yeah,
I'm glad that you are walking us through what was in your brain to give us these rankings right now. So
and
it makes sense.
And I do have a prediction.
What's your prediction, Gordon?
But I know if I announce the prediction, it won't happen.
Okay, so don't say it. Just remember this episode, and then when it does happen...
Should I not?
And then be like, hey, Liv, remember that episode where I told you...
Because the reason...
was in my head, and I didn't want to say it. Don't say it.
But because the prediction is I'm predicting something...
No. Don't go there.
I want to say it.
But then you said it won't happen, so...
It won't happen. The reason why it won't happen is because... the athletes will take that as motivation, and then they will, and then it will go against what's going to happen.
Okay, so say the opposite.
I'm predicting a team won't qualify for nationals, and if I say I don't think you're going to qualify for nationals, they're automatically going to qualify.
Okay,
for
so
nationals.
There's a team within the top 10.
There's a team
on the women's side or men's side.
This is a men's team. They're not in my top 10 for a reason. They're not in my top 10. I don't think. They're a team that when people are like, wait a minute, they didn't make nationals? Everyone's going to be confused. And I'm like, yeah.
Okay. So, cool.
But if I say it, they're going to hear it, and it's going to be poster board, and then they're going to make
we're
nationals.
Good. Okay.
So maybe I...
You did just enough.
But here's the thing.
You did just enough.
Is it wrong, though, if I don't say it? Because that means I'm not helping them. I should help them and tell them that I don't
believe
them.
No, because I'm curious. I want to know. But I don't want to know right now. I want to wait
we'll keep this a secret.
November, and then you hit me with...
I should write it down. How can we prove that I...
We'll write it down. We'll date it, and then...
I'll put it in an envelope. We'll make an envelope next podcast. We'll seal it, and then we'll open the envelope of the team.
Perfect. Let's do that.
Okay, we'll do that.
So be prepared.
Yes. All right. Thanks for listening. Like and subscribe. Tell your friends about it. We appreciate you listening?
Get some wonderful pistachios.
Get some wonderful pistachios.
These flavors look incredible, and I'm also hungry, so I'm ready.
And we'll be back on Monday, 12:30. React to Brussels Diamond League. Get ready for Prefontaine. More cross-country news and stuff like that. Talk about the freshmen.
Yes.
We didn't even go into that. We'll talk about freshmen we think are going to surprise. Freshmen that we might think are not going to do well. Because that happens.
That does happen.
I was big on Colin Salmon last year, and then he didn't run well at cross, but then he ran well outdoors. So sometimes they don't put it all together in that first season. They need like a season or two to kind of get their feet wet. You know, transitioning to altitude can be hard for some of these athletes. So we'll see what freshmen we believe in and what freshmen we don't believe in.
Okay.
Which sounds harsh. But we don't believe in them as freshmen. We believe in them as sophomores and juniors.
I'm glad you extended that response. Yeah.
Because not every freshman is great.
That's very true. They all have seasons.
There's
It's part of the... It's so challenging to go from the type of training you get in high school to then switching into the next level. It's always challenging.
Yeah.
Plus, the course load of schoolwork is 20 times harder. It's a whole thing. It's a whole process, so I totally understand that.
I guess this is good, but not good. But Yard Nagoose, freshman year, he finished 92nd at pre-nats, 24th at ACCs, which is pretty good, but probably about 19th in the region. Didn't even run at NCAAs. And look at him now. He's beating Josh on the world stage. Like, so yes. You can have average or subpar freshman years and go on to be one of the great,
absolutely
great NCAA athletes.
It does not define your whole season.
So, like and subscribe. Thanks for listening. We'll be back here Monday, 12:30. Thanks to Amanda for producing. Best producer in the biz.
Yes.
Sorry, Tyler. I just, you know, gotta see it how I say it how I see it. Is that what the phrase is? I don't know.
I say it. Maybe.
Good night. Take care.